Hello and welcome to the Niche Guarda YouTube podcast series powered by openbusinesscouncil.org and citiesabc.com. And as always, powered as well by all of us and all these audience, wonderful from around the world that is here with me and our special guests. It's always a pleasure to talk and feature new people. Actually, I've been actually featuring very different people from different industries, and we've been having from people from governments to people from technology, from foundations to big corporations. But the aim is always the best in the sense of profiling the best people in the world, the people that are doers and people that have a vision that is, I would say, utopian or at least very functional and utilitarian, especially in a world where dystopian is a word that is probably becoming more mainstream. So today I'm quite excited about profiling a personality associated with one of the most important organizations worldwide for everything that happened in the internet, and as well as one that has been working in technology for a long time. So I welcome to our series Bill Laboon, the head of education and grants at Web3 Foundation. And just as a small introduction, he has a fantastic profile, he's an author, and as well, he has an extensive experience in the areas of education, software development, project management, technical leadership across various industries. And as the head of education and grants at the Web3 Foundation, and an organization that is focused on providing funds for research and developing of the decentralized web, which is something that this channel is all about and is more important than ever. Bill has spent more than 15 years in software development before teaching computer science at the University of Pittsburgh for about 5 years, and is a frequent speaker and author. As an author, he actually has been responsible for 2 books, and we're going to talk about that, A Friendly Introduction to Software Testing, and the second, Strength by Numbers, that is a near future novel set in a world in which cryptocurrencies has eliminated traditional money, which is quite interesting as well for the purpose of this call and for we've been talking. So Bill has been as well with a wealth of experience and background that spans multiple sectors and positions. And of course, right now with the position as head of education and grants at Web3, has a big responsibility to look at ways of nurturing all the incipient as well important new developments of Web3, which is more important than ever, especially with everything happening with the physical, digital, immersive things, and as well with blockchain, and as well metaverse are more important than ever. As well as an academic, he has quite a lot of experiences as lecturer and visiting professor at the university, but as well working in the realm of developing of projects like the Quack project, which focus on evaluating and contrasting the internal quality of diverse cryptocurrency databases, code bases. So besides the academic pursuits, Bill Laboon has been as well in a journey into the private sector, including senior software developer at Think Through Learning and consulting FP Complete. So a lot of important things we're going to be as well presenting. I think for me is one thing I want to do for a long time about the Web3 Foundation, which is an organization I deeply respect. So we're going to listen from Bill how it works, how it's important for the internet. So that part I'll leave for him. So Bill, a pleasure to have you here. Great to welcome to our series.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
So Bill, let's start by your background. So you have quite a diverse, but as well, very rich background. And of course, you are leading right now one of the key organizations in the internet, and as well in the space of innovation around everything that is software, let's put it that way, because the decentralized internet or Web3 touches everything that we are doing in civilization, but it's more important than ever because there's a lot of roads. So let's start first by you. So we have, just tell us about from education, from background, even a cultural background, how did you reach where you are now?
Yeah, so I have always been interested in technology. It's the classic story of, you know, like a 5-year-old asking for a computer, right? I've always found, you know, computing fascinating. And as I learned more about it, just understanding how it can change the world, how it already has changed the world, right? You know, think, it is really amazing to me. I'm a bit older, but the fact that we have a supercomputer, you know, everyone has a supercomputer in their pockets now, right? You know, how has that changed the world? But both, you know, for worse and for better. So Yeah, so I went to university, I graduated, I became a software engineer, and then started leading teams. And as you mentioned, eventually I started teaching computer science at the University of Pittsburgh. At about that time, actually slightly earlier than that, I also got into blockchain. I was actually researching hash functions, which are a very important type of function used often in blockchain technology. And somebody mentioned that people were using hash functions to make money. And I was just using them for storing data. And I was very curious how this worked. So I started looking into Bitcoin very early on. And in tandem, continued my education work and continued teaching and continued developing software, really until 2018, when I saw, so Gavin Wood, who is the founder of the Web3 Foundation, gave a talk on a tool called Substrate that he had developed, which allowed anyone to make their own blockchain, and Polkadot, which allowed all of these blockchains to interoperate. And I was just absolutely fascinated, started reading through everything that I could find out about it. Eventually, my family and I moved to Switzerland here to work at Web3 Foundation in early 2019. You may tell from my accent, I am definitely not Swiss. I am American, but I've been here now for almost 5 years. Have continued to help ensure that the Polkadot ecosystem and Web3 in general has continued to evolve and to teach people about how it works and why it's important.
It's actually a fantastic trajectory. So before we go to the Web3 and a lot of questions I have around that, so tell us about you as an author, because I always like to see as well the creative part and as well, in your case, the research part, because that's quite a lot of work. So if you want to talk a bit about your books and the work you've been doing on research.
Sure. So I actually, nowadays, sadly, I'm much more of a manager than actually getting my hands dirty with research work. But in terms of books, I've always thought there are two things that are important, right? I want to write something that other people want to read, right? That's, something that's missing, right? And something that I can discuss. And so the first topic, I wrote a book on A Friendly Introduction to Software Testing, because I was teaching a course in software testing, and I realized there were no good overall comprehensive textbooks that covered this idea. I'm a very much a proponent of having high software quality and learning how to write high quality software. So I've always found writing high quality software very important, and I wanted to ensure that people knew how to do it. And so based on both the research that I had done teaching at university in this, as well as my years of experience both as a software engineer and a software quality lead, I wrote this book, A Friendly Introduction to Software Testing, which became used as a textbook in numerous universities. I think a lot of other universities, teams, projects were looking for ways, right, to write better software. And there just wasn't like a nice core book, right, to understand it from first principles. Similarly, as I was getting more involved in Bitcoin and Ethereum, in blockchain and cryptocurrency technology in general, I realized two things. Is one, not a lot of people knew how this worked. At the time, there were a few books like Mastering Bitcoin was out, which was very technical. There were a lot of posts on like Bitcoin Talk and on Reddit, but there wasn't a place where people could learn about it. Everything in general. And I also thought, every time a new technology comes out, people write science fiction about it, right? We think about submarines and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, right? And cyberspace and William Gibson, people started to see the future and they wrote science fiction about it. So what I thought was, what if we combined these two things? So I wrote a book that both would show sort of the social implications of what kinds of things would change assuming cryptocurrency became widely used. But along the way, teach people, how does it work? right? You know, what is it? What are the benefits of it? You know, what is it doing? When I send some Bitcoin from account A to account B, what's actually happening? You know, is it just magic? No, of course, there's something happening behind it. So in terms of this, it's the story of a student who finds out that there may be some Bitcoin, the keys to some Bitcoin stored in her apartment. And she's an English student. She doesn't have a math or computer science background, but luckily she has friends that do. And they have you know, some adventures as they try to get this Bitcoin and you know, explore the world that you know, that a cryptocurrency centric world would be like, you know. So in some ways, I think it would be very different. And a lot of those ways are things that, you know, I'm helping to work towards in you know, at Web3 Foundation. So we were very much in alignment, right? There's, you know, this idea that blockchains provide truth. And it's, you know, it's very hard to change. It's very hard to change the past, essentially impossible, right, in a blockchain. And, you know, that new fundamental concept, right? You know, a world that's exactly the opposite of 1984, right? Where the past was always changing and, you know, there was a centralized entity, right? You know, like Big Brother and the government that could change all of this stuff. Well, what happened if you know, sort of, it's an anti-1984? What happens when the government can't do that, when it can't change the past? What happens when we have some source of truth that we can build on other things? So that was the genesis of Strength in Numbers. So I have some various ideas for other books in the future, but right now my focus is on other things here at the foundation.
Amazing, and it's super important that kind of research and trajectory of you as an author as well. So let's go right now towards the Web3 Foundation. So let's start first, if you could, for people that don't know about it, because there's the Web Foundation, there is pivotal organization dedicated to fostering innovation in decentralized web software protocols, and they provide extensive support for Web3 teams and open source projects through various means, including funding, advocacy, research, and collaborative efforts. And at the heart of the initiatives lies Polkadot, the flagship protocol developed and supported by the Web3 Foundation. And Polkadot stands as a scalable shared chain. So I just want to highlight this first for people listening to us in the audience. So let's start first. What is the Web3 Foundation? And if you can get a background as well, Polkadot, but because it's behind of that. Mm-hmm. And then I want to go the definition of Web3, which is quite big. And sometimes it changes according to the people as well.
Yeah. So Web3 Foundation, we are what's called a Stiftung, a foundation dedicated to a specific goal. We're based here in Zug, Switzerland. And our goal is to build the decentralized web. So what this means is we've seen, and we'll go more into depth on exactly what Web3 is, but you know, we've seen a lot of problems with the current internet. We've seen you know, that there, it brings a lot of good things to the world, but it also has a lot of things that could be improved. So for instance, in terms of data ownership, right, and privacy, you know, these are things that are very problematic, right? That, you know, it's, you know, the Scott McNeely, who's CEO of Sun, said back in 2000, right, privacy is dead, get over it. And I think we've just seen it get worse and worse since then, right? In 2000, they hadn't seen anything yet of, you know, not just governments, which I think was a big worry, you know, in the 80s and 90s and like, you know, classical, you know, cyberpunk, you know, worries, but, you know, also, and cypherpunk worries, but also, you know, individual corporations, right? You know, we've seen a lot of very large corporations get a lot of data and, you know, take a lot of data and invade people's privacy. So the goal of Web3 Foundation was, you know, how can we build a world of, we call less trust and more truth, right? So less trusting these large entities, more trusting ourselves, right, to provide truth. So we are, like I said, a foundation. We are not an engineering team here. You know, we're not building things ourselves, but we do have a trust essentially that helps to build things and do research on things and teach people about things. So we have a various teams here that work on different aspects of this. So one is, for instance, technical education. So technical education does, you know, things like this. We go on podcasts, we write documentation, we write blog posts, we help people learn about how does blockchain technology work and how does Polkadot, and we'll talk about Polkadot shortly, you know, how does it work? How do I do things? Why should I use it? We have research. We have something like 15 or 16 researchers who work on cryptography and networking and even things like, you know, more social, right? Like economics aspects, you know, how do these things work in a new, with the, you know, the, what are the like new paradigms for this? So we have a lot of researchers sort of, you know, coming up with ideas. And, you know, we have other things. We have support. We have a grants team. So for people interested in building on this, we have given out almost 500 grants. You know, maybe we've just passed that. We're around 500 different grants that we have given to different teams to build, different tools, different infrastructure, do research, networking technologies, privacy technologies, all kinds of things. So one of the main projects that we work on is something called Polkadot. So Polkadot is an entire blockchain ecosystem that, blockchain, again, the big idea behind blockchain is that it provides some agreed upon truth. This is the great thing about blockchain. When you hear about Bitcoin, or Ethereum, or, you know, Polkadot, any of these, really what you should be hearing is we're trying to have everybody that uses this come to a consensus without some centralized entity telling us what the truth is. We come with our own sense of truth, we as a community. And what I thought was really neat about Polkadot, and what we see it as useful, not just for us, but for, you know, Web3 in general, which is why we're Web3 Foundation and not Polkadot Foundation, is that, you know, anyone can build their own blockchain on top of this, you know, with their own features, whatever works for them best. And we really focus on interoperability. So if you have a let's say you have a blockchain maybe that's focused on music, and someone else has a blockchain focused on insurance. Well, maybe, you know, we can have these interconnect and work together with each other to develop, you know, insurance for, like, you know, your music property rights. Or we have an Oracle parachain, which lets us know what's happening in terms of weather. And you have another parachain that stores currency, and you may want to automatically be paid out in, you know, some currency if, you know, there's bad weather, right? It basically acts as like automatic insurance for your house if there's a hurricane, for instance. So the great thing about this is that instead of having a sort of one size fits all system, you know, you can have different people, different teams developing their own things, yet all coming together to a central source of truth and interacting with each other in a trustless way. And this is the vision that really got me, interested in Web3 Foundation and Web3. I've been here now almost 5 years, so it's definitely a vision that I've stuck with and still believe in.
And congratulations. 500 grants is quite impressive. And of course, you build probably one of the most important foundations in these areas. But there's a lot of work to be done on these areas and how to take it forward. So let's look right now at the concept of Web3. And I think just as a small preliminary. So when you talk about Web3, first of all, just in Google, there's 25 billion searches. So that means there's a huge amount of search for this. And as well, there's two concepts that we have. So there's Web 3.0 that describes the next evolution of the World Wide Web and the user interface that provides access to documents, applications, and multimedia on the internet. And Web 3.0 is still being developed, so there isn't a universally accepted definition. And of course, this is coming from multiple different things. So let's look at how, especially you, as one of the major organizations in this area. And of course, Gavin Woods is a personality that was as well one of the founders of the concepts of blockchain that we have now and all the protocols on this. And you as well, being a personality of education, how do you define, first of all, Web3 or Web 3.0? I know as well that there's a concept coming from Tim Berners-Lee, which was one of the fathers of the internet. So there's a bit of a lot of blurred things, but I would like to hear from you. How do you define it? And as well, what would be for people listening to us, how we should look at this, probably from at least some kind of more assumed ways of looking at the concept.
Yeah, I mean, I should preface this with the fact that, as you mentioned, if you ask 10 people what Web3 is, you might get 11 different answers, right? There's still a lot of disagreement. Maybe in broad strokes, people agree. But so I'm going to say from Web3 Foundation's idea of Web3, right? So I think in order to understand it, we really should first go back to Web1, right? I know everyone talks about Web2, but what was Web1, right? So Web1 was the read-only web. So if you think about, like 1993, 1994, you had individuals who could put things up on the web for people to read, right? Tim Berners-Lee, for instance, would put information about, what was happening at CERN. But really, users of the web couldn't do anything with that besides read it, right? It was very static, right? This read-only web. So that was Web 1. The ideas of Web 2 are really read-write, right? So you had both the ability to read what was online, but also write to it. So Wikipedia, for instance, social media, blogs, it became very easy for users to not just, passively consume, like television, but also interact. I think this is where we saw, a huge change, right? And a huge outgrowth, right? In the late 90s with the birth of Web 2 and then, continuing into the 2000s and early 2010s. Of things you could now do, right? You just added interactivity to the web. That's a huge jump from Web 1. So now Web 3, right? This next step. And I would argue it's read, write, own. Because one of the problems with Web 3 is you can write a lot, right? I can go onto whatever your favorite social media site is, and I can enter something there, and maybe hundreds or thousands or maybe millions of people can see it. But I don't own that, right? Whoever owns that social media site owns it. Again, not going to name any names, but you could imagine some of these you probably don't want that person to have your data. You're really trusting them. Right. So you trust that they're going to be good. You trust that when you put your data onto a site, that they're going to do good things with it. However, we've seen in the past that we can't just trust these entities, right? Not just because sometimes they're malicious, but also because there are data breaches, right? We have people losing credit cards, huge numbers of credit cards. The United States government has lost a lot of data about its contractors that were being stored. These are huge honeypots for hackers. Why? Because there's one place, right? It's I forget who said it, but someone asked a bank robber, why you rob banks? And he said, that's where the money is. It's like, well, why do people hack Facebook, right? Or that's where the data is, okay? So the idea of Web3 is to decentralize that, give ownership to the individuals, right, which does require a little bit more responsibility, but on behalf of those individuals. But it's a lot more power too, right? Being able to own things and provably state that you owned things and own your own data. This doesn't mean just ownership in terms of like a capitalistic, all right, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine. But also from a more like deeper philosophical meaning, my data is mine. I can control what I want to do with it. And I would say this is the big aspect of Web3 that we really try to promote here at Web3 Foundation.
Yeah, and this is actually one of the key elements, I would say, for the evolution of the way you're going to have this further iteration of the internet. But I think my question right now, the next one would be, so at the moment, definitely, like you mentioned, we have an evolution between Web2 and 3, but the challenge has been, how can we define decentralization when the world is coming to more centralized systems? If you look even the paradox of ChatGPT started with OpenAI, the foundation, and as a foundation, and it became a very corporate company owned by Microsoft in general, at least the majority invested by Microsoft. So it's a paradox of what was meant to do. So, and when you look at the protocols that were built by Gavin Woodson, all you guys in Polkadot and all different things, the challenge right now is that there's the, so first of all, there's the evolution of what we mean. Even beginning of the internet was supposed to be as well much more scientific. Actually, the internet started initially as a military experience and then an academic experience. But the challenge is, how can we build this internet that looks at the physical and the digital and all the immersive parts? Because, of course, part of the Web3 definition, like you put it, is the ID system of the internet, but as well the immersive part of the internet, especially right now with the concepts of metaverse and increasing AI that sums all the different technologies. So how is your personal vision and as well the foundation? I don't know if there's differences, but I'm sure there's similarities. How can we look at especially the concept of decentralization? Because it's, I think, probably the biggest elephant in the room. In one end, there's a lot of great work, and the same with cryptocurrencies. At the moment, we have a massive discussion worldwide about this fight against cryptocurrency, especially from the US government. But at the same time, people don't even know about it, and people keep using it. It will not stop. It's just how we do it. So, but I think the concept of decentralization, I would like to touch that in particular, because I know that is kind of very important for you guys, and you are experts as well in this area.
Right. I mean, I would argue that decentralization is sort of, you know, the sine qua non, right, of blockchain. If you don't have decentralization, it doesn't matter what data type you use to store the data, which is all blockchain is, it's a particular type of data structure. If you don't have decentralization, then what's the point, right? And this also is very interesting to me personally, because it touches on my two college majors. I was a dual major in computer science and political science. So I'm going to put on my political science major hat for a moment and discuss it from that perspective, right? So it turns out like there's always a tension, right, in any political system between centralization and decentralization. Right. So we see, you know, in some cases, right, we have, you know, very, very centralized states, right? I think as an example today, you know, you can think of France or China, right? You know, if you go to France, you know, pretty much every school in the in all of France will be learning the same thing on the same day for the same grade. It's a very centralized top-down system. I live in Switzerland right now, which is very federal. My wife worked in the next canton, the next state, and she had an entirely different holiday schedule than me because they celebrate different holidays, they do things different, the rules vary. It's a very, very decentralized state. And then there are a lot of states, in between and in different extremes in different ways. And what we see is that centralized entities often can get things done much more quickly. And they're very strong, but in the short run. Right. It turns out if you want to get something done, right, you get, you know, one person who can just make all of the rules, right? That's why, you know, in World War II, you had Eisenhower. You had one person in charge, you know, of the European front. You didn't have, you know, lots of people all running around, each, you know, working on their own. That would not have been very efficient for that one specific goal. On the other hand, though, when you have that, that's a recipe for tyranny and stagnation in the long run. You get a lot of stuff done. But how do you determine, you know, what the goal is, what people want to do, and also how do you determine who the rule makers will be, right? And I'm not going to name any names about, you know, who might be like a tyrant, right? But you know, you can see that there's that possibility, you know, always, right? And then once you have a tyrant, that's a recipe for stagnation. You can't change. You can't move. You just do what this person wants. On the other hand, you know, with decentralization, like that seems, you know, it's really great. You can do a lot of things. You can decide what you're going to do, but there's never going to be 100% of the people in favor of doing something. And so, you know, we see also, you know, in blockchain technology, we see this. You know, some blockchains have, you know, a very, very rigid. Set up, it's very difficult to change. You know, like Bitcoin, you have others where you have a single person in charge who can really make the decisions. You have some where there's, you know, like lots of people all making decisions and arguing. So, all right. So how do we, like as Polkadot and we at Web3 Foundation, how do we make sure that our system can evolve and do so in a decentralized manner? So we actually have developed, we spent a lot of time on this. So again, we have numerous researchers, numerous PhDs here who have developed what we call Polkadot OpenGov. And that allows the community to make decisions. It's entirely democratic. There's no first-class citizens involved in it. What I mean by that is someone who has more power, right? There's no equivalent of senators or House of Representatives or presidents in Polkadot. But they can make decisions that are automatically enacted by the network. And unlike other chains, you may have heard of forks, like, you know, Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. You know, they sort of separated at some point, Ethereum and Ethereum Classic. They've, what we call forked. Our protocol does not really allow for forks, right? So we can make a decision, decide on it, have it enacted, and move forward with it. So that allows us to be like a very, you know, autonomous system that's very democratic, but also still very powerful. So we get a lot of the benefits, right, of the centralized decision-making without having a centralized decision-maker. So this allows us, right, to evolve, you know, to continue, to accept input from the users of the system, but also get a lot of the benefits of, a single direction, right, of figuring out a way that we can all agree on a single direction. So again, this is something that it is challenging, right? You know, there is no simple answer to how we can do it, but it's something that we've given a lot of thought to. We've developed a system. And one of the great things about Polkadot, as I mentioned, you know, it allows you to evolve. So if we determine that our current system is, you know, not really meeting the needs of us, we actually can vote in a new system, vote in new ways of making rules, new ways of governance, et cetera.
Yeah, and this is probably the most important thing we need to consider right now is are we going to be creating these rules and are we going to create this evolution in the most, I would say, ethical way, but as well more coordinated way, because there's a lot of conflicting versions. Like you said, at the moment, there's 1.2 billion websites in the internet. Most majority of those websites are still Web 1, Web 2. And at the same time, a lot of infrastructure is not prepared for Web 3. And although all our phones, like you said, are already more or less prepared. So it's a question of a paradox. So are we going to take this forward? So one of the questions I would like to ask right now, especially you mentioned the 500 grants. And I know that, of course, you're responsible for education, which is a key element. It is one of my passions. I've been actually teaching Copenhagen Business School and as well a group in SIC and other universities. And one of the things I found out, probably the biggest thing I found out in my work as education, actually we're creating the Open Business Council University focus on educating on these areas, is definitely there's a massive lack of just basic knowledge. Okay, what we're discussing here, for my audience, probably is quite kind of standard. If you are in this channel, of course, you understand this. I'm very grateful for my audience. But as I speak with governments, I've been dealing with prime ministers and ministers. They don't even understand the basics. So the question is, how can we, first of all, foster an understanding of these concepts without going into, because at the moment, people think about cryptocurrencies, about Lamborghinis and all these kind of Lambos and craziness, and people are crazy. And of course, some whatever, what happened with a couple of one or two projects that get all the bad currency. But then there's all the research that you guys are doing and all the great people. Interview here, Dr. Paolo Tasca, that was actually one of the people working with the central bank with the US and the European, the German Bundet, the Central Bank of Germany, and as well in Switzerland. And a lot of this is actually doesn't get the same advertisement as all the other parts. But at the same time, there's a complexity of how this can be used. And there's a huge amount of innovation going. So focus on the positive side. You guys definitely focus in, you went to 500 grants. I think it would be good probably for you to highlight a couple of them that you think are really important. They're doing a breakthrough. Even the work that you guys are doing and as well Polkadot is doing to build a proper foundational that is not another dystopian version of the world, which sometimes it happens with new technologies.
Yeah. There's actually, I feel like I could talk for about an hour about the things that you've just said there. I want to touch very briefly before I discuss grants. I want to touch upon educational initiatives. and what we're what we're doing and what needs to be done. So we actually are working on several different educational initiatives, many of which are focused on Polkadot itself. But in the broader perspective, we have developed an edX course, Blockchain Fundamentals, which is just a course that's free for everyone to take. It's like, how does blockchain work? And describe things. We barely even mention Polkadot in it. Just at a very fundamental level. What is a blockchain? How does it work? What are the different aspects to it? We do a lot of documentation, articles, and things like that, as well as outreach. We also are doing more one-on-one work, with government entities. We have a, we do have like a public policy group here at Web3 Foundation, and we talk to people in the EU and in the US and in other places, and in academia, answering questions about how blockchain works. Because as you said, a lot of people hear about blockchain and they think, oh, stupid monkey pictures, right? That people somehow are buying and selling online. And we see blockchain as truth. All blockchain is, it's a way of people coming together to determine what is the truth, right? And I think that is like the key thing to remember here, and the key thing that we're trying to express. And there are different ways to get to that truth, but really we're here for truth, right? That's why we're all in this ecosystem. Okay, so how are we doing that? So aside from our educational initiatives, as I said, grants is another important thing that my teams work on, and so we give out grants that can help build out this vision of the decentralized web. And honestly, many of these are quite technical, right? Things like networking libraries, research papers, that we fund, through academia. But we also do a lot of projects that end users would find interesting. So many ways of interacting with blockchains more cheaply, right? And for instance, issuing a Bitcoin transaction or an Ethereum transaction can cost quite a bit. We have done research and projects to make that more efficient and cheaper. User interfaces, improving them. That's a very common complaint, right? Is that if you use a new smartphone, you generally don't need any training. You just open it up, and my son, right, when he was six, or you even see like 2-year-olds, right? They get it. They know, all right, I press here and I see a video or whatever. And that's more difficult to do, with Bitcoin or issuing a transaction to a smart contract or something. So we've issued quite a few grants of helping that user interface. We've provided grants for teams that are building alternative implementations of something. So what I mean by this is, right now, Parity is the main team that are building Polkadot nodes, the software that runs the network, the computers that are running on the network. But we actually were rather uncomfortable with that there was only one company that was making this software. And, we do as much as we can to prove this is the actual software that's running, and you can, verify it and compile it yourself. But it still seemed very against our ethos, right, to only have one company producing it. So we actually have given out grants to several competitors, the first of which, Quadrivium, has an alternative implementation called Kagome, which is running. We've given out grants to two or three other organizations that are building their own implementations in different languages, right, which provides some security and backup, right? That we developed a specification, and now all of these other teams can build on that same specification with a different language. All software has bugs, but hopefully, if there's a bug in implementation A, it won't be in implementation B. So we have tried to make Polkadot unstoppable. We have tried to make it open. We've removed as much power from the actual current engineers. We want to make this an ongoing system that you know the holders of DOT, you know, the users of Polkadot can determine the future of going forward. So I would say you know these are some of the major things that we've done in terms of grants to help the ecosystem grow.
Congratulations, because I think it's a key element, and this is a key element as well for all the ecosystem, because at the moment, especially when it comes to blockchain, there's a big transition because, of course, blockchain technology is mainstream, used by the likes of Amazon, Google, and all these big corporations. But at the same time, the definition of Amazon, if you go to banks, they still have challenges. And even if they're trading, or at least they're trading, they start trading it, but they keep creating the bug of what it is and what it is not. So coming back to the Web3, one thing we didn't touch was the immersive web. Okay, so at the moment, there's a kind of the idea of, first of all, in especially at Apple, you mentioned NFTs indirectly, and the NFTs has been a big wave. And the NFT technology, of course, was fantastic for a lot of things, but it created another bubble. But at the same time, it's becoming mainstream. So, of course, then it came all the wave of metaverse, and the metaverse was probably one of the first stages of some kind of Web3 iteration, and some platforms did a fantastic work. Some of them scale bigger, some of them scale less, but there was a big wave of metaverse. So do you define, and I want to touch this section of the metaverse kind of iteration, of immersive iteration of spatial computing related with the tokenomic systems around the internet, which until now realistically didn't succeed, at least in the mainstream way, but indirectly it succeeded. So how do you see that part, especially with all the work that you guys have been doing? And of course, if there's someone that knows about this, it's definitely you guys. But do you see a wave that you can actually have, especially right now with the Apple and of course Facebook and Meta did a massive work to commercialize and actually make mainstream the metaverse concept. But I think what especially Meta did, it was probably more to clean their image, but not necessary to really create a really more decentralized, or at least more creative. But of course, even Mark Zuckerberg has been talking a lot of podcasts about his vision of the web that is precisely more immersive. But the challenge is always about his immersive control by a couple of people, or is immersive to create a creative economy or a gig economy that can actually empower the next generation of all of us. Because at the end of the day, we are all part of the gig economy, which is $1 trillion plus. And if you look at the creative economy, it's around $540 billion, according to some studies. And at the same time, most of the people coming out of the universities, they have no clue about these things. So I would like to see how you see this part, first of all, the metaverse, and how this kind of immersive vision, we can have the vision of AR, VR mixed with especially what Apple is doing right now with the Vision Pro, that I'm more interested on that vision of a mix between physical and digital. But as well, there's a lot of work to be done to achieve that, and as well, how we can do it in a kind of more positive vision, and as well, technological vision that actually empowers all of us.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you made this distinction between standard AR, VR, and metaverse, because I do think, at least according to my definition, maybe not Mark Zuckerberg's definition, that there is a difference, right? Living in, or not living, but rather existing, right, in an immersive environment, This concept has been around in one way or another for years, right? I mean, there was a movie in the 90s, right? Lawnmower Man, about virtual reality and Second Life, rather, came out when was that, in the 2000s, been around for a long time. But I wouldn't call any of these a metaverse, right? Because they are immersive in the sense that, you are immersed in it. However, it's not immersive in the sense that you can be immersed in that anywhere. You are tethered, right, to Meta or Facebook. You are tethered to who was Second Life? Linden Labs, right? They control all of it. It's not something that's open. It's not something where you can decide that I have my data and I want to use it somewhere else in some other metaverse. I can't easily move this. The protocols are not compatible. The items aren't compatible, etc. I mean, this is one of the nice things, right, about NFTs and their use in the metaverse. So, you know, I know right now people hear NFTs, they think of just like, oh, you know, they're monkey pictures or whatever. But, you know, really, and from a technical perspective, they are a non-fungible token. They are a token that represents something that is non-fungible, that is not replaceable by anything of it, you know, of its type. So you then can use these things, right, in all kinds of different areas. You know, these NFTs can be used to represent, right, any of these, you know, like items that you may make in the metaverse or own or use. And so actually this is you know, maybe not that well known outside of like really nerdy crypto circles, but this was one of the things actually that made Vitalik Buterin think about Ethereum, is that he was playing World of Warcraft and they changed the parameters of the character he liked to play. And he said, wait a second, how can they do that? Right? Why did they get to do that and change this unilaterally? Maybe I should write, you know, have something where this can't be changed. And so I think, you know, if we really want a metaverse where people can trust and not say that, you know, whatever, I'm playing a game and I've got my sword of destiny, and then, you know, the next day, you know, someone working at you know, metaverse company decides it's no longer a, you know, that sword of destiny doesn't have these powers, it has some other powers, or maybe it's not a sword at all, it's a hammer or a dog, right? You know, they could do whatever, they have control. How are people going to trust that, right? And you know, we've seen this so many times where people's trust and faith in, you know, in corporations and individual entities have failed, right? Not always from malicious acts. Sometimes, you know, it's accidental. But again, this all goes back, I really think, like, you know, philosophically back to truth, right? If you're in a metaverse, you want to have some sort of confidence, right? That if I build a house, all right, this, I can prove this house is mine. If I buy a sword, all right, I own this sword. I can take it with me and do other things with it. It's not going to change behind me. Someone can't take it away from me. And I think this is one of the foundational blocks, right? You know, to have a metaverse that you really can believe in, right? That you really can be immersed in. You also need to have ownership of that. And I think that's where you know, blockchain technology really you know, comes in handy, is that, you know, you can then use it to underlie a lot of these metaverses.
Yeah, I like the way you put it, because it's a key element that we demystify this and that we take it forward. So I know that we are almost finishing the time, so I want to touch still two questions, if it's okay for you. So let's go back to education. So you touched that a lot of the work you've been doing is related with, of course, some grants for universities, a lot of research papers, a lot of these things. So one of the things for me that is more alarming, we touched this in a couple of interviews previously in this channel, is the lack of education on these areas in mainstream organizations. I'm talking major universities, but at the same time, in general, for instance, I have, if I look at the children of my family, some of the ones in universities, some of them are studying engineering and robotics. They don't even study AI, and they don't study much of robotics, to be honest, besides just theoretical stuff. And when it comes to blockchain, almost no university has like official curriculum about these areas. So, but then the alarming part is that even if you look at executives, and I talk from my own experience, if I was talking with a lot of business people around the world, and of course, Open Business Council has around 20,000 companies listed and professionals, and we are getting to 1 million in the next 1 year. The reality is that people don't really understand any of this. And that's a very scary reality. I'm not talking everyone in the streets. I'm talking business leaders, and especially the future of the economy, but as well young people. So as someone that's been a teacher and as well responsible for education, and you touched a couple of areas about what you guys are doing, but how can we shift the attention towards this? Because the challenge, if you don't really change the attention, what is going to happen is a couple of few billionaires and trillionaires, whatever, we're going to control all of this, which is already happening. But it is not their fault, okay? They're just doing good work, and the wealth they create is mostly because people are passive. And as well, it's a big question, but I would probably a bit open, the touch of digital obesity. Because effectively, people are not learning any of these concepts, but they spend 5, 6, 7 hours in front of devices. So I would like to touch this, because it's a very important for all of us, especially for people that listen to us that are in the areas of crypto and blockchains, because you can create a lot of solutions, but it has to be bearing in mind these challenges.
Yeah, I don't know if I can give a solution for the problem worldwide, but I can say, what we're doing and how we see that we can help this, right? And because I do see it as a problem, right? As a computer science educator, more generally, it amazes me, everybody, uses a computer for almost everybody, right? A huge percentage of the population, and have no idea how it works inside. And I'm not saying everybody needs to get, a PhD in computer science just to work on Excel. But I feel like, you should have some basic ideas, how this works, which just it's so helpful. And so I think there are a couple of ways that we specifically are working on this, with blockchain to help people understand. So first, we have a whole series of free courses. So as I mentioned, Blockchain Fundamentals, Intro to Polkadot, all of these are on edX. So if you look up Web3X, we're actually issuing a few more in the near future if you're looking at, interested in programming your own blockchain. We also see it as very important to have universities, teaching this, being more added to their curricula. Speaking as a former, a former lecturer at a university, so, teaching faculty, my focus was teaching and not research. One of the things that's we are trying to do is help local universities, teach blockchain. And, we've been moving from there to provide, our eventual goal is to provide material that we can give to teachers who are looking to incorporate blockchain into their curriculum. So, I give, guest lectures at University of Zurich and Hochschule Luzern and a lot of these local universities, interacting with the professors there. We are now working on, developing material that we can then send to any university that wants to teach a blockchain course, or simply, include a lecture on blockchain in one of their classes. We'll have material for them. So this is how we see it as scaling, right? This is hard. Again, speaking as a former teacher, it's hard to get that material. And, as I mentioned, when I was teaching a software testing class, I couldn't find a good software testing textbook. And I think it's similar with blockchain. There actually are some good textbooks out there, but there are, and as far as I know, no just ready-made courses here's the material, now you can teach the course. And a lot of lecturers are looking for that. So we see that as something that can, scale our reach dramatically, is provide the ability, for teachers to, have this material and then teach blockchain. So, I think of teachers as a scaling function, right? A teacher can teach 40, 50, 100, 1,000 people, and then they all know what the teacher knows, or at least some subset of that. But if we can help the teachers teach them, right? That's a second order scaling function. If we can help 1,000 teachers teach 1,000 students, we've reached 1 million people. And so we've really been working on that underlying concept, as we see is, what to get out there. Again, we also have our own, our own outreach that we do on a more one-to-one basis. But in the long run, this is how I see, our work as really, helping to get blockchain education into, the minds of everybody that wants it out there in the world.
Yeah, and that's the way to go. And that's really, I completely subscribe. And I know that it's not an easy task, and I appreciate the way you touch it. So last thing, and I think I know that we passed 1 hour, so the last question I have to touch. So, of course, you mentioned about the Web3 Foundation, and you're going to put all the links for people listening to us to all of the Web3 Foundation, the Polkadot as well, all the different personalities and as well the projects. But at the moment, you touched some of the things, but if you could just highlight, so for instance, you have, in terms of the support projects that you'll be working, in terms of some of the grants and some of the work for people listening to us, how they can engage with you guys, learn more. You touched as well some courses. You have, for instance, the Polkadot flagship protocol with the Web3, the Kusama Canary Network, XCM. These are some of the things that are from the website. Web3 Mock, massive open online courses. So there's a lot of great things that you guys have in your website. So if you could just highlight how people can get out of the problems and focus on the solutions, that's is what I try.
Yeah, sure. So it really depends on what you're interested in doing. If you'd like to learn more about Polkadot from a technical perspective, the Polkadot wiki, so wiki.polkadot.network, has hundreds of pages of Polkadot written by some of the best educators in the space. If you are looking to learn in a more structured way, if you look up Web3X, and I'm sure the link will be here, that we have several courses teaching you about blockchain at a from a very fundamental level all the way up to building your own blockchains and smart contracts, things like that. If you're interested in building something that you think would be useful for the blockchain ecosystem, or hopefully Polkadot in general, our grants program, grants.web3.foundation, we're always interested in hearing about grants. And if you want to build but you don't have an idea, we have several RFPs of things that we're looking for, that we're looking to fund teams to build in our ecosystem. Research.web3.foundation, if you really want to dig into the papers that our research team is producing, that's always available. So there's a lot of stuff out there if you're interested in learning more about Polkadot, Web3, or just blockchain in general.
Well, thank you. So I have a lot of more questions, but I want to be respectful of your time, Bill. Probably there will be a second round, and I want to touch more a couple of things related with Web3 and AI, but we'll do it afterwards. First of all, congratulations, Bill, for the great work you guys are doing, and of course, a key work for all of us. And congratulations to 500 grants, which is probably even more important. That shows that 500 organizations worldwide that they were contributed by you guys, and that's the most important. And I hope that all my audience loves what you did. We were very practical and very as well to the point of the challenge we're facing. Great insights, people. People listening to us, please go to all these links and to what Bill mentioned. That's really fantastic resources, academic papers, massive online courses. There's a lot of great things that sometimes people don't see it. Thank you so much, Bill. It's been an honor to have you here, and very excited about what you're doing. And thank you for everything.